Good evening. I'm Michael Carey, the moderator of this year's running programs. Thank you for joining us. Tonight and throughout this week, you will have a chance to meet and hear from the legislative candidates running for seats throughout South Central Alaska. We've invited all the candidates to participate. Those appearing on the program are those who have accepted our invitation. Candidates who are running unopposed have been given the chance to talk directly to the voters. Joining me tonight are Daisha Eaton of KSKA Radio and Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News and Grace Jang of KTVA Television. Now let's meet the candidates for Senate District J, Republican Bob Bell and Democrat Hollis French. Let's go to opening statements, starting with Bob Bell. 1 minute, sir.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank KKM for inviting us here today and for you to moderate this and you guys to ask us questions. I've always been of the philosophy that somebody should succeed at what they do before they run for office. And I think I fit that category now. I've run a business here in Anchorage for 38 years. We've employed up to 200 employees. I've handed paychecks to over 1,000 Alaskans. I've served on the assembly for 6 years. I've served on boards and commissions, statewide boards and commissions. I've even run 3 statewide campaigns, which was Alaskans for Legislative Reform, which was to get term limits for the state. And it passed all 3 times. It was overruled by the court twice and by the legislature once. But I think those are the kind of things that you should have in your resume when you step forward to run for office. And I think I can bring those skills to Juneau in dealing with the oil companies, in dealing with government employees, and in dealing with the public. So I would appreciate your vote on November 6th.
Thank you, sir. Now let's hear from Hollis French, your opening statement.
I appreciate the invitation as well. My name is Hollis French. I'm running for re-election because I believe Alaska's best days are still ahead of us. I'm focused on 2 issues, energy and education. My energy plan has 3 important components. 1, maintain a strong North Slope oil industry. 2, keep a stable supply of natural gas coming to our homes from Cook Inlet. 3, for the long term, invest in renewable energy projects like the Fire Island Wind that's been completed, and next up, I hope we all can build, Susitna Dam. Now education. I believe that education is the obligation, the moral obligation of one generation to prepare the next to assume the duties of the world. I want to improve our education system from pre-K all the way to the University of Alaska. With a talented, intelligent workforce of young Alaskans and a thriving energy industry, I think the future will be very bright indeed. Thank you.
Now we'll go to our reporters' questions. The respondents will get 45 seconds when they're asked directly, and their opponent will have 30 seconds to comment on what they've heard in the answer. So let's go to Daisha Eaton with her first question for Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell, you said that you are not fond of the bipartisan coalition. Without the coalition, how can legislators work across party lines?
Well, I think we've done that for 225 years. You know, you have Republicans and you have Democrats and other parties that come along. Once you're elected, you're representing the people of your district, not just the ones in your party. So I think that legislators should work across it. Lyndon Johnson and Tip O'Neill were famous for that. And Mark Begich and I did that when we were on the assembly. Charles Woolforth and I even had a radio program for a while, you know. So I don't think there's any reason why the Democrats and Republicans can't work together. I don't think they need a formal structure to do that.
Mr. French.
You know, the coalition has been a remarkable time in Alaska's history, I believe. 6 years of Republicans and Democrats actually sitting down, shaking hands, and working together on a daily basis. It's been a good time. And frankly, the coalition was a reaction to the Vico vote-buying scandal that erupted in 2006. We decided we had to do things differently. We had to put aside our partisanship, and we all had to learn and grow and learn to listen to one another and respect one another. I think it's been a good time. We've saved over $16 billion. It's been a good era in Alaska's politics.
Kyle Hopkins.
This question is for Mr. French, and I'll follow up on Daisha's question. Did the coalition agree to avoid certain topics, hot button social issues, or agree to keep those issues off the table in order to keep the peace among the Republicans and Democrats?
When we shook hands, when Republicans and Democrats shook hands to form the coalition, we knew we'd have to work on things we agreed on, like education, like savings, like building Alaska. And we'd have to set aside the extreme agendas of each party. And I think it's worked out very well. Frankly, my constituents don't want me to go down there and work solely as a Democrat. They send me down there to work across party lines and get things done. And I think we've been very successful. Just the savings component. In 2008, we put $5 billion into savings, the single biggest deposit into the state savings account in the history of the state. It didn't get a lot of press, but it's the kind of good work that we've been doing, and I want to keep doing it.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds on what you've heard.
I think that did occur, and I think if you look at a lot of the issues that never made it to the Senate floor, coastal zone management, Denali Kid Care, two good examples of social issues that died in committee because of this coalition. If there had been a Republican majority or a Democrat majority, those issues would have been dealt with. But instead, we had a coalition that was basically non-functional.
Dace Eden for Mr. French.
You've served for nearly a decade already, I think, if I'm counting correctly. What do you have left to accomplish in Juneau? Why do you want to go back?
I spent 6 years as a state prosecutor, and this state still suffers from some of the highest rates of sex assault and sex abuse in the nation, and that's shameful. It's going to take a generational change to accomplish what we all want to see, which is an end to that scourge, and I want to keep working on that. I've held two crime summits that have helped us focus on the problems of alcohol abuse, on homelessness, on the low education standards that kids don't get off on the right foot without. And so for me, it's a continuing passion to keep downward pressure on crime rates and keep families free to raise their children in safe homes.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds.
Well, I can't imagine anybody in the state that wouldn't agree with that. I mean, we're all going to work towards those goals if we're elected to office. I would be more inclined to not only deal with those, but also to try to find a better tax regime for our oil industry so we can get back to producing and finding oil. I would like to see our state spending under control. It's too much now. I would like to see our economy with a better future. Those things are things that I would work towards, as well as what Hollis just listed.
Okay, let's go to Kyle Hopkins for Bob Bell.
Mr. Bell, you just mentioned the need for oil tax reform. BP paid your engineering firm more than $1 million in 2011. As a legislator, how can you remain objective when asked to decide whether oil companies should receive tax breaks?
Well, I think that if you don't have the strength of character to be able to do business with the oil companies and not be their lackey when you're down there, you shouldn't be running for office. When you say that my firm was paid $1 million, it was, but that money all went out in payroll. I mean, it's for people that are doing work up on the North Slope, producing that field, bringing the wealth to Alaska, making sure that Prudhoe Bay and the pipeline are still working. It's a whole community of Alaskan contractors that do that. I can't imagine a business in Alaska that doesn't somehow or another do business with oil companies, either directly or indirectly.
Hollis French, 30 seconds.
You know, I worked 13 years in the oil industry, 5 on a platform of Cook Inlet, 8 on the North Slope. I used my North Slope earnings to put myself through law school and to feed my family. I have a BP retirement. I don't begrudge anybody their oil industry work. I think at some level in this state, we're all sort of in the oil industry. Where Bob, I think, went wrong was not disclosing that $1 million right up front and telling voters so they would know that he'd done that work. He dragged his feet about disclosing, and I think that's the error. You've got to just be up front, tell people where your loyalties lie, and then they can vote and make an informed decision.
Dacia Eden for Hollis French.
Mr. French, your district has changed due to reapportionment. It's now more conservative. Are you a liberal, and are you too liberal for this district?
I spent 6 years of my life as a prosecuting attorney putting criminals in jail, holding them accountable for their wrongdoing. My liberal friends worked at the Public Defender Agency. That's where they were. I enjoyed that job. I liked standing up for the community. I did it. It wasn't a summer job. It was 6 years of my life. I've met people door-to-door this summer, and they know I worked hard for a living, went to law school, and put those tools to work prosecuting criminals. I'm not a liberal. I'm a centrist, and I think that's what most Alaskans are. Most Alaskans don't relate to either party. They don't relate to any ideology. They just want people who work hard, who get things done, and that's what I bring to the table.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds.
Well, I am hesitant to hang labels on anybody, but I would certainly classify Hollis French is left of center, that's for sure. And just to get back to the last question, I didn't drag my feet to disclose my clients. When we called APOC, when I filed, they said I didn't need to give them the list because I didn't own the company anymore. So we didn't. They called us back in and said, the rules changed, so now you do, and we immediately gave them the list. So that wasn't quite accurate.
Kyle Hopkins for Mr. Bell.
Let me follow up on the cover during the coverage of those APOC reports. You said that you were offered a bunch of money in engineering contracts if you would support a private prison project favored by VICO. You said you rejected the offer. My question is, why didn't you report that apparent bribe attempt?
I did. Matter of fact, I sought counsel on it. And what they said was, because that project did not require a vote of the assembly, there was no vote coming up, there was no vote anticipated, that there was no crime committed. So I dropped it and went on about my business. And in fact, they said, if you did, they could file a libel suit against you. Because what they were saying is, we just want you to go out and promote this project when you're at community council meetings or talking to the media. And I said, no, absolutely not. But there was no vote coming before the assembly or anticipated.
Hal French.
I think the news reports were kind of shocking that as early as 1996, VICO was attempting to influence people with campaign contributions and with engineering contracts. That was what Mr. Bell told the reporter. That was what was written down. If that's not accurate, it should be corrected. But that was shocking to me. That requires you to step forward and say, FBI, there's something wrong here. They're offering me campaign contributions in exchange for a vote. That's bribery. That's wrong.
Okay, well, let's go to our candidate questions. You're going to be questioning one another. 45 seconds to respond and then 15 seconds to respond on what you heard, both candidates. Mr. Bell, you go first with the first question for Mr. French.
Also, in past forums that we've been in, you were asked who you're supporting for president, so I'd ask you again, who are you supporting for president and why?
I'll likely be supporting for Barack Obama. Like most Americans and most Alaskans, I was thrilled, not thrilled, but at some level satisfied when he ordered the raid that resulted in the death of Osama bin Laden. That closed a horrible chapter in all of our lives. That being said, I don't think that's the central issue in this campaign. It's really about who is going to bring the energy to the table to focus on energy issues and education. That's what the voters are talking to me about as I go door to door. Local issues that they're concerned about, not who I'm supporting for president.
Mr. Bell, 15 seconds.
Well, the Obama administration just recently withdrew 11.5 million acres from MPRA for exploration. They held up the shale drilling projects for years and years. He's made it clear he'll veto any ANWR legislation. Obamacare will cost Alaskan families $2,500 a year more in...
We're going to have to leave it there. You'll get, I'm sure, another chance to go into some of those things.
Right.
Mr. French, your question.
Thanks. Mr. Bell, in several community forums, you've laid the failure of Denali KidCare at the feet of the Senate bipartisan coalition. You should know by reading the paper that that's false, that we passed that bill. That bill went to the governor, and he vetoed it. Are you aware that he was, in fact, the person who destroyed our efforts to increase Denali KidCare?
Yes, but the fact is that you knew that you'd put a poison pill in there with the abortion issue, and you knew that the governor would veto it. And if you had not put that in there, it would have passed.
Mr. French.
I don't think you've read your history on that. The Hyde Amendment has been in effect for over 10 years. Mr. Parnell was aware of it when he was in the Senate. He vetoed that. I think it was a horrible veto. The Senate did its job, and the governor failed the children of the state of Alaska.
Let's stick with Mr. French, and then we'll go back to Mr. Bell. Mr. French, your second question.
And Bob, you've done 5 fundraisers at the Petroleum Club. I don't know what you're telling your contributors there, but what specific oil tax ideas are you putting forward for the state?
Well, first of all, the Petroleum Club is an excellent venue, and that's why I use it. It's a good central location, and they don't cost as much, and they turn out a good fundraiser. So if there was a better deal in town, I would take it. The fact that the Petroleum Club has no impact whatsoever. As far as a new tax idea, I haven't got into that. I intend to do that when I'm in the Senate. I think that House Bill 110 is a good place to start, and that we need to work something out. Right now, I feel that between the Senate and the governor, there's two extreme positions in place, and nobody's moving in between. So that's my intent, but I haven't got into any details of it yet.
Mr. French, 15 seconds.
We passed a bill 17-3 out of the Alaska State Senate and over to the House that would have lowered oil taxes significantly on new oil. I think that's the way you're going to see the next legislature attack this issue. Specific, targeted allowances that lower taxes for new investment, new wells, more oil in the pipe.
Bob Bell, your second question.
Are you familiar with the project that the Matsuburo and the railroad are doing to run a rail from McKenzie Port to Houston, and are you in favor of that project?
I support infrastructure projects. I voted for the capital budget this year that had $2.9 billion worth of projects in it, projects that are going to let Alaska stand on our own 2 feet. For too long, I think we've turned to the federal government and helped and waited for them to send us money from Washington, D.C. Keeping a fair oil tax on the books means we can build better schools, build more roads, and make Alaska the kind of state we all want to live in.
Mr. Bell, 15 seconds.
15 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this project's been held up by the Ninth Circuit Court because the Sierra Club sued them. And there was a bill that passed the House that died in Senate Judiciary, chaired by Mr. French, that would have held the people responsible for their costs by suing and stopping this project.
Mr. French, your third and final question.
Well, I guess I'll follow up on that. The bill you're referring to is a bill that was actually vetoed by Republican Governor John Huntsman as the governor of Utah. That exact same idea, because he knew that it attacked his state's control of primacy. It attacked his state's rights ability to enforce their own environmental laws. Those are the kinds of things you learn when you do your homework, study an issue, and get on top of it, Bob. I would suggest that you spend more time on those issues.
This was supposed to be a question. I think we're kind of messed up here. Mr. Bell, go ahead, please, if you'd like to comment on what you heard.
On that?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I have done my homework. That bill passed the House with only 5 dissenting votes. It went into Senate Judiciary and was never brought up or never allowed to come out. It did pass one Senate committee, so it was stopped cold by Mr. French.
Mr. French, your final question.
Bob, I'm still concerned about your unwillingness to join a bipartisan coalition. I think the last 6 years have shown Alaskans that we can reach across the aisle, make lasting commitments to the other party, sit down and get our work together in a civil way. Why are you opposed to joining a bipartisan coalition?
As I stated early, I firmly believe that Republicans and Democrats can work together once they're elected, and that you don't need that formal process. And I think the question that was asked earlier strikes home. What happens is that coalition is weaker, and therefore anybody that doesn't like something, a very few senators, can kill it. And what happened was significant issues that should have come before the Senate didn't.
15 seconds.
Republicans and Democrats working together for the good of the state is not what's wrong with Alaska. It's what's right with Alaska. That's what the voters of this district expect me to do, and that's what I look forward to doing.
Okay, we'll go back to our reporter questions. Dacia Eaton for Mr. French.
Mr. French, there's been an effort to expand self-defense law in Alaska, and the legislators have been debating this and will likely debate it again. What do you think about Alaska's self-defense law? Is it strong enough, or should it be stronger?
You know, every human being has an inherent right of self-defense. You don't get it from the government. You don't get it from anywhere else. You were born with it, and I support that. As a prosecutor, I know that every human being is allowed to defend themselves against an aggressor. That's natural law. That supersedes governments. I believe our self-defense law is extremely strong. You cannot be prosecuted if you're using self-defense, using force to repel an aggressor. And I've declined many, many cases where citizens are lawfully using force. What you've got to be careful of is empowering gangsters to use guns and shooting at each other and then claim self-defense, hide behind self-defense laws after they fired a gun in the Diamond Mall or at Four Corners.
So
that's what you've got to be careful of.
You believe the duty to retreat is important?
it's
we're going to have to leave it. Maybe you can get to it elsewhere. Mr. Bell.
Well, here's a case of Republicans and Democrats working together without a coalition. I agree with what Hall of French says. I think everybody has a right to defend themselves and their families and their possessions. So if somebody's attacking you, you should try to retreat. I agree, but you don't have to.
Kyle Hopkins.
This question is for Mr. Bell. On the ballot this year, voters will be asked. You know, they'll be choosing between you. They'll also be asked a question they get asked every once in a while: should there be a constitutional convention? My question is: do you think the Constitution needs amending? I'm thinking, you know, should gay marriage be legalized, or money be available for private schools from the state? Do you think it's time to amend the Constitution?
Mr. Bell, 45 seconds.
Well, you know, this comes up every 10 years because that's a requirement. I would be very reluctant to have a constitutional convention because the trouble is that opens up the whole Constitution. And if you ended up with a Ron Paul type takeover of that process, you could end up damaging our Constitution much more than you could fixing it. I think there should be term limits. I think there should be a whole bunch of things that we would like to see, but I would be reluctant to put our Constitution at risk. We've got one of the best constitutions in the nation, and I'd hate to see it get degraded through a convention.
Hollis French.
Bob and I agree. I don't think we need a convention. You can take up constitutional amendments one at a time through the legislative process, debate them, discuss them, pass them on to the voters for their ratification. We've done it several times over the years, and it's a process that's working. Opening up the entire Constitution to a convention, I think, is unnecessary.
Dave Eden for Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell, Alaska's heavily dependent on federal subsidies. What more should the state be doing to move away from this dependence? And how could you support those sorts of things from Juneau?
Well, the example that comes to mind, and I'm not sure that the state senate would have much to do with it, but the school district, you know, to get that federal money, there's certain federal requirements, and oftentimes those federal requirements cost more than the federal money they receive and puts the district into a tough spot to do their job. So I think that would be a good example of federal money that it'd be nice that we just didn't get it.
House French, 30 seconds.
How do we wean ourselves from federal dependence? One, keep a strong oil tax on the books. Keep a fair oil tax on the books. Alaska cannot look to the federal government to pay its way into the future. The federal deficit is too big, and it's just not tenable. Keep a fair oil tax on the books. It's our oil. Use that money to build Alaska. One school, one child, one town at a time.
Kyle Hopkins, you have the last question in this particular round.
This is for Mr. French. Why in a state as rich as Alaska, at least rich in resources, do our schools struggle with such high dropout rates and low test scores?
It's a great question. And one of the things I've been focusing on as a member of the Education Committee is pre-kindergarten. Early childhood development is the best and most important place to spend time and energy to improve education outcomes. We're one of the few states in the nation that doesn't offer pre-K. And in the studies we've done on the pilot pre-K program we've funded, it's just remarkable what it does for kids. It moves kids from the back of the pack to the middle, moves kids from the middle of the pack to the front, and it's a remarkably persistent effect. They stay there. They stay that way as they move through the education system. Pre-K is the missing link. We're pushing hard to get it. We've added money to it in the last couple of years, and we're going to keep working on it.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds.
Well, you know, I've spoken to a couple classes over the years, and what I find is that there's just too much disruption in the classes. And I think that dates back to when I was in school. You know, if you're disruptive, you got put in the hall or punished some way, and it doesn't seem like that happens now. And the teachers I've talked to are very frustrated by that because they're not allowed to have the discipline that they'd like to have in their classrooms.
We'll stick with the reporters. They're going to ask both of you the same question. You'll each have 30 seconds to respond, starting with Mr. Bell. So, Daisha Eaton, your question for Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell.
Or for both of them.
Legislators have been working for a gas line for a long time in this state, and I think we could say it's at least 3 decades. And now they're at it again. And do you think this can really happen, or are they just blowing a bunch of smoke here?
Well, probably a little of both. That pipeline isn't going to happen until they can make a profit with it. And with gas selling for $3.40 now in the lower 48, you can't make that make a profit. If they go to Cook Inlet or Valdez and go to an LNG plant and can sell it to Japan for 12 or 14 bucks, then it makes sense. The trick is to get them to sign a 30-year contract before you spend the money.
Hollis French, 30 seconds.
There's a reason why I opened up by saying you need to maintain Cook Inlet as the source of natural gas to heat our homes. For the foreseeable future, that's the reality. Someday there will be a big pipeline that leaves the North Slope. There's too much of a resource there not to have it happen. But you've got to build the biggest pipe possible. The economics of gas are far weaker than the economics of oil. So build a big pipe, bring it to tidewater, make it all Alaskan, and we'll all do well. But it's going to be some time.
Kyle Hopkins, last question, and then we'll go to closing statements.
I'm going to follow up on. There's something you mentioned in your answer that I wanted to ask about discipline in schools. Do you think teachers should be allowed to use corporal punishment in schools? Should they be able to spank students to keep them in line?
No, I don't believe that. I never did that with any of my kids, and they all turned out fine. But I think they need to say when there's a disruptive kid in the class that they can boot them out and send them to the principal's office or do whatever they have to do to get them out of the classroom until they can conduct themselves properly. And I was making a point there. Is what I'm saying is there's too much hindrance for the schools to do what they need to do to educate our kids. There's too much political control.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Mr. French, 30 seconds, briefly.
I might be a little to the right of Bob on this one. You know, my grandfather was a stern New England schoolmaster. And as I get a little older, I feel more of that coming out of me. And I don't have a high tolerance for misbehavior in a classroom. Kids should listen, kids should be there to learn, and they should be there to make sure that everybody else has a fair chance to get ahead.
Okay, closing statements of 1 minute each. We'll start with Mr. Bob Bell.
Well, first of all, I think we all want the same thing for Alaska. We want a good education system, and I've done everything I can do to help our education system. I've chaired the school bond jest for 5 years. I was on the school district budget advisory, and we've endowed scholarships at universities for students. And so I think we all want what's best for Alaska. We want our kids to get a good education, but when they're done with their education, we want a good job waiting for them when they get out. Good opportunities to raise families like Candace and I have done here in Alaska and have a good life. And we can only do that with a strong, vibrant economy. I will do that as best I can to do that for you if you elect me on November 6th. So I would appreciate your vote.
Hollis French, 1 minute.
Thank you. I think this election offers the voters of Sand Lake, Jewel Lake, and Turnagain a clear choice. I want to keep the positive trend of the last 6 years going. 6 years of Republicans and Democrats sitting down together, working together, respecting one another, and reaching principled compromises for the good of the state. I'm afraid my opponent wants to take us back to the bad old days of one-party rule. I served in the legislature during that time. I saw the end of that era as the Vico vote-buying scandal that brought it to an end. That's not the way forward. Working together, we can build a better Alaska. Better roads, safer communities, schools you can be proud of. You know, during my time in Juneau, I've drawn on the 13 years I spent in the oil industry and the 6 years I was a prosecuting attorney to guide me. I think that during this campaign, I have gone from one end of the district to the other and met many of you at your doors, and if I missed you, I left my phone number. I've enjoyed meeting you. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I'd be honored to have your vote on Election Day.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. Thank you, Mr. Bell and Mr. French. Next on Running, we will hear from the candidates from House District 19. Stay with us.
Election Day is November 6th. From the presidential race to Alaska's at-large House seat to ballot measures, every vote matters. Every issue matters. Hi, I'm Peter Granitz, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. I'll be at the Dena'ina Center election night, recapping the national races and what it means for our state. What happens if the Senate changes hands? Will Congress remain divided? Can an election remedy some of the brinksmanship? And how can Alaska regain some clout at the Capitol? Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Now let's meet the candidates for House District 19. They are Republican Anand Dubey and Democrat Lindsay Holmes. Mr. Dubey, your opening statement, please.
Thank you very much. Hi, I'm Anand Dubey. I'm running for Alaska State House from District 19. I'm not a career politician. I'm just an engineer trying to make a difference. In addition to an engineering degree in chemical engineering, I also have a master's in business. I know how to design complex systems, troubleshoot problems, and measure the effectiveness of programs and processes. I've been in Alaska for over 13 years. I'm a naturalized American citizen, and I'm truly appreciative of the opportunity, the liberty, and the freedoms that exist in America. I'm pro-business, pro-family, pro-education, and pro-personal responsibility. I'm a family man. I have a wonderful wife, Shivani, and a daughter, Arna. This November, I really appreciate your vote. Thank you very much.
Lindsay Holmes, 1 minute, please.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to thank you and KSKA and KKM for giving us this opportunity. My name's Lindsay Holmes. I'm running for re-election to the State House representing West Anchorage District 19. District 19 basically includes parts of Turnagain, Spinard, and Sand Lake. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised in West Anchorage. I've represented our neighborhood in the State House for the last 6 years, and I'm running for re-election because I love our community and I love our state. I'm proud of my record in the legislature. I've sponsored bills to keep construction projects moving forward, to support our local tourism businesses, and also to protect Alaskan consumers. I've worked with the local medical community to make sure more doctors will see Medicare patients, and I've cracked down on domestic violence. I've worked to put more computers into our schools, to ensure safety in our neighborhoods, to save for our future. And I look forward to today's discussion. Thank you.
Now let's go to our reporters for questions, starting with Daisha Eaton.
Mr. Dubey, why are you running and what is your roadmap to victory?
Well, my roadmap is very simple. I'm trying to meet as many people as possible to impress upon them that this time around they have a choice. In 2010, nobody ran against Ms. Holmes, and I believe that, you know, everybody needs a choice. And so that's my roadmap to victory. As far as why I'm running, well, I feel very deeply about the opportunities that exist in America. And I feel that at this point in time, the American dream that a lot of people have enjoyed over the years is in jeopardy. And so I feel that there has to be a totally different mindset to compete here with Ms. Holmes, somebody who can provide a totally different approach to representation. And so that's my claim to fame. Like I said, I'm just an engineer trying to make a difference. And
Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds to comment on what you've heard.
I think choice is a great thing. I think it's wonderful. I actually did have an opponent in 2010. It was an independent. It wasn't a Republican or a Democrat, but I did actually have an opponent in 2010. But I think it's great for the voters to have a choice, and I think they're going to see over the course of the next half hour probably a fairly clear choice between the two of us. I think there are going to be some great differences. I've been involved in the community, born and raised here, but then as soon as I moved back after school, I've been involved in a whole lot of things in the community, not just in the State House, but also on boards and commissions and volunteer opportunities. So,
Grace Jang, your first question.
Okay, Ms. Holmes, this question is for you. In the 5 years that you've been in the legislature, you've always been a member of the House minority. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how effective could you be as a member of a minority group?
That's an excellent question. Actually, I think extraordinarily effective. I have passed bills every single year that I've been in the legislature under my own name that I've carried, from supporting small businesses to some major domestic violence, including a bill that cracks down on domestic violence offenders that Republicans had tried for years to pass, and Governor Palin tried to pass. And I was the one who was able to get that passed in my first term. So I think that there are very different types of leadership. Some come by having the Speaker of the House say a gavel in your hand, but the legislature is all about relationships with your constituents and relationships with your colleagues, and I think I've been extremely effective in the minority.
Mr. Dubey, 30 seconds.
So I would like to disagree a little bit. I think it's very difficult to lead from the back row. I think it's very difficult to lead being in a minority. I think that somebody as dynamic as Ms. Holmes could have done much more in 6 years had she not been in the minority. And the job of a legislator is to champion many things, not just pass a few bills. So I would say that, had she been in the majority, had she joined the coalition, she could have done so much more.
Okay, Daisha Eaton, your second question.
This is a question for Ms. Holmes. Yes. In your voter statement, you say that you passed a bill to lower the cost of energy for consumers. Can you explain that?
I say passed. Oh, the legislature. That in the legislature we passed bills to reduce. Yes, we've done a variety of things actually in the legislature on energy. There's not a one size fits all issue of energy. Obviously, in rural Alaska, I was a big proponent of the Renewable Energy Fund and continuing to fund that, which is across Alaska provided wind turbines in some places. In other places, it's biomass. It's not one size fits all. Here in the state, I've supported the bills to create storage for natural gas, which we've seen is going to help avoid blackouts and brownouts in the winter, and also incentives for drilling in Cook Inlet and in interior Alaska. So a variety of different things.
Mr. DeMay.
Again, I would respectfully disagree. If you look around you, let's look at what's happening. Gas prices are up. The rural Alaskans don't have enough money to heat their homes. And so it's all about the results. It's not about the talk. Politicians are known for talk, talk, and more talk. But as an engineer, I can tell you nothing has occurred since Ms. Holmes has been in power. 6 years, she talks about the gas line. Where's the gas line?
Okay. Let's go to Grace Jang for your second question.
And this question is for Mr. Dubé. You advocate for smaller, smarter government. What exactly do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is efficient government. What I mean is that today technologies exist that you can take bunches of people and processes and paper moving and make it more efficient. But unfortunately, government has not been doing that. Take, for example, Amazon.com. They started as selling music, and today they sell groceries and whatnot to your doorstep, and they compete with Costco. So I believe there's technologies and processes that exist that government can adopt and really take all the monies that we're spending on ineffective processes into direct citizen services. So government has to transform itself. But nobody, and I mean nobody in the legislature, is actually focusing on that. It's business as usual. So that's what I mean by a smaller, smarter government.
Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds.
Actually, I would disagree with that. I would say that there are things we've been doing that I've been encouraging in the legislature, including, for instance, I come from a business background, and our business permitting system and licensing system was incredibly inefficient. It took weeks and weeks and was incredibly hard to start a business, to keep your paperwork up to speed. The Department of Commerce has been working, and I've been encouraging them to continue working on making that easier, to continue looking at our permitting system to make sure that we are not putting unnecessary burdens on the permitting system. There are a lot of things that we're doing to increase efficiency.
Daisha Eaton, final question in this segment for Ms. Holmes.
Ms. Holmes, as you mentioned earlier, you've worked extensively on legislation to crack down on domestic violence offenders, yet it remains a problem here. Is jail time really an answer for this, or do you have any new solutions that you'll bring to Juneau?
There are a couple of different things. Jail time is one thing on the backside. Obviously, another bill that I successfully championed was to help people get better access to restraining orders, which is more on the front end. And it's going to take a lot of prevention. I've also worked with youth groups it's going to take a cultural shift. And I think working with our youth is a big thing. And I've gone and worked with lots of youth groups to encourage changes in attitudes. It's going to be an attitude change on the prevention side, understanding, having people understand that violence is not acceptable, that it's not a solution. And that's got to start with the young people. And I've been active on that.
Mr. DeBay.
Again, I think there's been a whole lot of talk on crime and domestic violence and not a whole lot of effectiveness. And when I say that, when you take a person and you shove them in jail, all you're doing is you're sending them to your university where they'll learn more about crime and they'll come out a better criminal. If you walk up and down Spinard, you'll still see prostitution, you'll still see drug dealers. So that's Ms. Holmes' district. So this whole concept of attack on crime, this hasn't occurred. It just hasn't occurred.
Grace Jang, your final question in this round.
Mr. Dubé, this question is for you. So the governor's proposal to extend tax cuts to oil companies by up to $2 billion per year failed in this last legislative session. How would you have voted on that?
Well, It's difficult for me to predict how I would have voted, because if you look at the ACES bill and a bunch of other information, there is so much data that as an engineer, it was very difficult for me to take the time to figure out every little aspect of it. I will say this, that the entire body has failed the people of Alaska. Whether it's the so-called giveaway or it's you know, the amount of oil that needs to be in the pipeline, bottom line is we need more oil, and everybody needs to come to the table and stop playing politics with the future of Alaska. That's my perspective in all of this. For example, if you... I think I'm out of time.
Okay, Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds.
Actually, that's interesting, because I think I understand in June you actually said at a public forum that you supported the governor's bill. I voted against the governor's bill. I strongly believe that there are changes that need to be made to our oil tax system, but I think the governor's bill wasn't that. I think that he came out with a poorly crafted bill that he couldn't explain, and I think that then the governor refused to compromise. I think there was plenty of room to make progress in the last few years, but the governor took a my way or the highway approach, and that's no way to run government.
Okay, now we'll go to our candidate question segment. Mr. DeBay, you'll have the first question. Ms. Holmes will have 45 seconds to respond, and then you, Mr. DeBay, will have 15 seconds to comment on what you've heard.
So, first of all, it's a tough question, and I do apologize for asking this question. I want to thank her for her public service. So my question is this. Families in West Anchorage and our state budget depend on business success, yet leading business groups have given you a failing grade. For example, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce calls you a job killer. What would you do differently in the next 2 years to fix what you haven't done in the last six?
Thank you for the question, actually. That's an excellent question. The group that you referred to, it's actually very interesting. As far as I can tell, that entire grade was based on the fact that I voted against the governor's oil tax bill, although I've consistently advocated for responsible solutions. At the same time, I have worked to promote Alaska pipelines, gas pipelines. I've done jobs, I've passed bills that will keep construction projects moving forward. I've passed bills to help the tourism industry move forward. I've worked on a variety of pro-business things over the years. So as far as I can tell, that grade was based entirely on my vote against the oil tax bill, which I still believe was the right choice.
Mr. DeBay.
So I again would like to disagree. You got a D from the Chamber of Commerce. That I can understand that maybe was based on the governor's bill. But what about the National Federation of Independent Business? They gave you a 67 percentile. This is a national body. Everybody, lot of organizations have given you bad grades. NRA has given you a bad grade. NFIB has given you a bad grade.
We have to leave it there. And that question will have to be rhetorical, because now it's your turn, Ms. Holmes, to ask the question.
Okay. A few months ago at a forum, you said that you were in favor of privatizing our K-12 education system. That's a pretty dramatic shift in our policy, and one that I think would be disastrous. How do you see that playing out?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure how or I'm not in favor of privatizing education. I'm in favor of competition, and those are two different things. I will say this. Right now we're spending $16,000 per student. That's the public education system. A lot of private schools can educate students at a much lesser cost. So what I believe is that when you introduce competition, that is the best way to tackle a monopoly. Education has right now become a monopoly. If you look at the combined cost between the public school system and the university system, we're spending over and upwards of $1 billion. So I feel that we're still not having the quality, you know, of students that is with that kind of money. So that's what I mean by, you know, introducing more competition, but not necessarily privatizing the whole thing.
Okay, Ms. Holmes, 15 seconds.
Thank you. The question I think you were asked was actually about privatizing the whole system, so I'm glad to hear you're not taking that extreme view, which hasn't worked across the country. I'm a big believer in school choice for all a variety of different schools, but I think that it would inevitably come, the voucher system would inevitably come at the expense of our public school, which is our primary constitutional responsibility, is to support the schools that actually
support all students. Okay, we'll have to leave it there. And your second question for your opponent.
Oh, my second question. Oh, it's my turn again.
Yeah.
Anand, you've stated that you oppose any expansion of the Denali KidCare program. Is that correct?
That is not correct at all. Again, maybe I was dreaming or whatever I was doing there, but I don't remember saying anything like that. I think Denali KidCare is a great program, right? We need to help our families. The bigger issue in a lot of these social programs is how do you fund them? That's the big thing. And if you don't have the money to fund them for the next 20 years, something needs to happen. So that's my concern in a lot of these social programs is how will the state of Alaska continue funding them? And then there's also the question of abuse. A lot of people, when they get on these social programs, there's no way for them to climb out of these social programs. So you got to look at both sides of the equation when you think of these social programs and safety nets.
Ms. Holmes, 15 seconds to follow up.
Denali KidCare obviously supports children for health care, and I'm a big fan of making sure that kids have health care and pregnant women have health care. But I guess I'm worried that at the Tea Party Forum, this is two questions in a row, that you've given one question, one response at the Tea Party Forum and
okay,
another
we'll
when you're on
TV. We'll have to wrap it up right there. Mr. DeBay, your next question.
So, Ms. Holmes, you had an opportunity to support legislation that gives parents the rights to be involved in their minor's daughter's abortion decision. Why shouldn't the parents be involved? Because I know you're opposed to parental notification, and that is very troubling to families such as myself and other families. Why do you think the parents should not be involved in the decision when it comes to abortion?
I absolutely believe that they should be involved. I absolutely believe that young women and girls should be talking to their families. I oppose the bill that came before the legislature because it did not provide enough safety nets for women who are in abusive situations. We lead the nation in domestic violence and sexual assault. There are a number of cases. I think that in the vast majority of cases, we very, very much want young girls talking to their parents. I support that wholeheartedly, as long as there are enough exceptions for girls who are in abusive situations. And the provisions in that bill required all sorts of notification, notarized statements, and there just were not enough protections.
Mr. DeBay, 15 seconds.
So again, I would like to point out that the exception that you were talking about was the Papa Pilgrim case, and the number of such cases are very small, yet you still basically opposed the bill, and vast majority of families saw that as an attack on the basic family unit. So I'm hoping that you are conscientious of that fact.
Okay, we'll have to move to our third question and final one in this segment, Ms. Holmes.
Thank you. Who did you vote for president in 2008?
You know, I don't remember 2008, but I generally vote Republican. So I want to say that I must have voted for the Republican president.
Actually, that's interesting. I've looked at your voting record. You didn't actually vote in that election.
Yep.
It was a presidential election. It was also the Stevens and Begich race, Young and Berkowitz. And your voting record, I mean, you just haven't shown up since you've been registered. You've never voted in a municipal race until this year.
We'll have to leave that right there. Mr. DeBay, you have the last question in this segment.
Okay.
That was her last question.
So my question is, you say excellence in education is one of your priorities. It is certainly one of mine. What should we do to make delivery of education more accountable and affordable?
I think there are a couple things that we can do. I think, one, we need to put more vocational education into our schools. I'm a big believer that we got off on the wrong track years ago when we decided that all students needed to be college prep. I think we need to put more vocational training in and give students that opportunity. There are great jobs out there that we can use to build our economy. Also, I'm a big believer in childhood literacy, and this is something that doesn't cost a lot of money. It's teaching parents how to read to their children. It's teaching parents how to help their kids learn from a young age. And there are a lot of things we can do for education, but I think those are two things that aren't going to cost a lot of money that we can do to really improve education.
Mr. DeBay, 15 seconds.
So basically, reading scores, math scores, they're all down in the state of Alaska, yet you call yourself a champion of education. So I'm a little confused on how is it that you're thinking of championing the cause of education, where at the end of the day, the students are not getting better grades, and yet you advocate throwing more money.
We'll have to leave it at that. Okay, now let's go to our panelists' questions, starting with Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Holmes. Alaskans pay some of the highest health care costs in the nation, and more seniors are getting denied as they try to get health care. What can you do to help us with this from Juneau if you're reelected?
I've actually been a big champion of this in the last few years. I worked with the medical community behind the scenes on opening one of the Medicare clinics that have recently opened, because when I first went door-to-door in 06, that was one of the biggest problems I heard, is seniors could not find a doctor. So I worked with the medical community to open that Medicare clinic, and we've worked with Congress to give the state some more flexibility in how to deal with Medicare. It's a big problem, obviously, that's got to be tackled both on the state and the national level. But those are a few of the things I've worked hard on.
Mr. DeBay, 30 seconds.
Well, basically, the cost of health care is outrageous. I mean, a small business owner cannot afford health insurance, and every year the cost of going to the doctors and the hospitals is continuously rising. So again, legislators have been talking a good game for a long time, yet meaningful reform still hasn't occurred. So my question again to Ms. Holmes would be, you know, regardless of what you say you've done, what has been the end result? Have the people seen any relief on the street? Period.
Okay, let's go to Grace Jang.
This question is for, sorry, I'm losing my spot here.
Mr. DeBay.
Mr. DeBay, thank you. In a state as wealthy as Alaska, and this is a topic you've touched upon a couple times, so this isn't your opportunity to flesh it out, we have some of the worst dropout rates in the nation. How do you propose to fix that in Juneau?
Well, basically, like I said, we have to address this monopoly that the current education system has become. People learn in different ways. I have a degree in chemical engineering and master's in business. I learned my way. So I understand that there could be different styles, there can be different ideas of behind education. So the idea is to give the flexibility to the teachers, flexibility to the parents, so that people can be educated. Right now, we're not talking about the children, we're talking about the school system. And the mission of the people is not to fund schools. The mission is to educate students. And right now, that is not happening.
Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds.
You know, choice in education is a big thing. Not all students learn the same way. I do believe that. I actually went to a variety from traditional schools to the optional programs, and I think we've made great strides with our charter schools, and I think that's giving different students who learn different ways. I think homeschooling is a really good option for different students. I think private schools are a good option. It's good to have a lot of options out there, and like I said before, I think bringing the vocational training back into the schools is going to be a really important thing for us to keep working on.
Okay, let's go back to Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. DeBay. There's been an effort in Juneau to explore self-defense law and possibly expand it here in Alaska. The legislature has debated it and will likely debate it again. What do you think of Alaska's self-defense law? Is it strong enough, or does it need to change?
Well, I think that Second Amendment is a cherished thing that we always need to figure out how best to sort of make sure that the citizens are not being victimized whenever they avail the Second Amendment right. So right now, HB 80, there was a bill called HB 80 that was opposed by Ms. Holmes, and that basically gave protection to a lawful gun owner should they have to use their guns in the protection of their life and property. So I think there more work has to happen so that the state doesn't come after legal gun owners. That's the bottom line. And a lot of my views come from my early experiences in India, where I've seen a lot of violence and what happens when the government goes amok.
Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds.
I'm very supportive of the Second Amendment. I'm very supportive. I'm Alaskan. We hunt, we fish, we do all sorts of great things. And I've made no efforts whatsoever to crack down on gun, contrary to what my opponent says, to kind of crack down on this. We have incredibly generous and very protective self-defense laws in this state. The bill that Mr. DeBay is referring to was actually opposed in 2010 by the prosecutors, who said it would lead to more violence in our state and make it hard to prosecute murderers and lead to shootouts in
parking lots. Let's go back to Grace Jang.
Okay, this question is for Ms. Holmes. We're going to be voting on whether we should have a constitutional convention. Mm-hmm. If we do have that convention, what would you like to change about the Constitution?
Ooh, that's a really good question. You know, I really think that we're really lucky in this state. I think that we have a tremendously strong Constitution. We benefited from being the 49th state and being able to look at the first 48 and see what happened. And I think that we have a really good one. I think that the protections that we have for the right to privacy are very important to us, and I think the protections that we have that say that the resources of the state are for the benefit of the citizens. You know, I'm sure there are things I'd tweak around the edges, but I think it's a pretty good document all in all.
Okay, Mr. Bay, 30 seconds.
Well, you know, there's always things that can be changed when it comes to the Constitution. So to say that we just need tweaks is not necessarily correct. Take education, for example. Again, I'll go back. I mean, we are dumbing down Alaska. So how do you address education if not change the Constitution and to reflect the realities of today? So there are a multitude of issues that that people need to get together and ask ourselves, are we better off today than we were, you know, a few weeks or a few months or a few years ago?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. DeBay. Now the reporters will have questions, and it'll be the same question for both of you, and each of you will have 30 seconds. Let's go to Daisha Eaton, starting with Mr. DeBay.
Mr. DeBay. Legislators have been working for more than three decades to try to get a gas line here in Alaska, and now they're at it again, and they say it could happen. Do you think they can finally make it happen, or is this just all talk?
Ma'am, I have no faith left in the legislators that have been talking for a long time. Because, again, I've been in the state for over 13 years now, and I've been hearing about the gas line. So as an engineer, if somebody had given me the task of building a gas line by now, I would have done it. So the thing is, it's become a political issue. Everybody talks about it, wins the election, and goes home. So I have no faith. The economics are not really supporting the current gas line. And so we got to do something different. But I have no faith that, you know, it'll be built.
Lindsay Holmes, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I didn't actually hear any proposed solution in there. I just heard, well, that's not working, but nothing as to what he would do differently. I have worked on a variety of options, looking at AGEA for the big line going forward. We're seeing some consolidation of the groups there. I also, this last year, crossed party lines and voted to support a bullet line option. And to make it easier, to support easier permitting and a whole bunch of things that would expedite any, whether it's whoever builds the big line or the small line, would expedite the project.
Let's go to Grace Jang.
Okay, this question is for both of you, but I'll start with Ms. Holmes. A woman whose same-sex partner was shot and killed at the Millennium Hotel in a work-related shooting is suing the State Workers' Compensation Board for survivor benefits. Same-sex marriage is not recognized in Alaska, and it's not legal. Should she get those survivor benefits?
I believe she should. I think that the Supreme Court several years ago said that because same-sex marriage is not legal in our state, there was an equal protection issue, and therefore, under our laws, same-sex partners are entitled to state benefits. And so, therefore, I think that the same theory would carry out into this case.
Mr. DeBay, 30 seconds.
So it's basically a legal question. I mean, and I'm not an attorney, so I can't really predict, you know, how it should play out. But I can tell you that this whole same-sex marriage is considered a very threatening situation by a lot of churches and people of faith. A lot of people of faith think that this is an attack on the family unit, and this is an attack on the basic Christian principles. So we got to make sure that whatever we're doing, we're not creating more hatred in our society. And so it's a deep social problem. It's a deep social issue that we got to work out.
Okay. We're going to go to our closing statements now. And Mr. DeBay, you have 1 minute for a closing statement.
So one of the things I want to remind people is that I'm an immigrant. I was not born in this country. So the attack Ms. Holmes has made on my voting record, it took me a little while to understand the liberties and the opportunities that exist in America. It took me a little while to understand that my voice does matter. And so... From the day that I started voting, not only did I start voting, but I also started getting politically involved. So here I am running for office. It's an incredibly tough thing to do, to run against somebody like Ms. Holmes. You know, I have less money probably, and I've been walking the street. So when you think about, you know, my voting record, think about this. Think about the fact that I am the face of the common man. And right now, the common man, the common family is not being represented. And so this November, I hope that you would consider me as a valuable choice and vote for me. Thank
Lindsay
you very
Holmes,
much.
Lindsay Holmes, 1 minute to close.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity to come on today. I think you've seen today that you have two quite different options this November. I've historically worked with both Republicans and Democrats to get things done in Juneau. I would suggest that my opponent has a slightly more extreme view on some things. My goals are simple. I want to educate our kids, I want to keep them safe, and I want to have good jobs for them. I've worked hard in my time in the legislature. Sorry, Michael. I've worked hard in my time in the legislature to ensure that Alaska remains a great place to live. And with your help, I'd like to continue to do so. And I would very much appreciate your vote on Election Day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeBay and Ms. Holmes. Next on Running, we'll hear from the candidates from District 20. Stick with us.
Hi, I'm Daisha Eaton, KSKA's South Central reporter. On election night, I'll be reporting from the Denina Center, covering the South Central races. With 59 of 60 seats up for grabs because of redistricting, this is a high-stakes election year. Will the 10-10 split in the Senate be upset? Will the bipartisan coalition survive the election or be cast aside? Whoever wins the South Central races will help determine how Alaska moves forward. Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.
Now let's meet the candidates for House District 20. They are Republican Mia Costello and Democrat Michelle Scannell. We'll start with Mia Costello. 1 minute opening statement, please.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Mia Costello, and I am running for State House in District 20. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I've spent 44 years as an Alaska resident. While I've served 2 years in the legislature, I focused on economic development. And I passed House Bill 252, which makes Alaska the most competitive state in the country for certain kinds of fast-growing businesses. I've also focused on making government more efficient, and I've led an effort as the chair of the DNR subcommittee to make the 2,500 backlog of permits in Alaska be reduced. And we're making progress in that area, and I'm proud to have been a leader in that regard. I'm also a wife and a mother. My husband is a lifelong Alaskan, and we're raising two beautiful boys who are enrolled in the public schools here in Anchorage. My website is votemia.com, and I welcome any questions at 227-5276. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Michelle Scannell.
Yes. Hi, my name is Michelle Scannell, and I'm running for State House. I've been involved in public service my entire life, working in the legislature in both Texas and Alaska. During my time in Juneau, I was content to work in this out of the spotlight and focus on the issues that were important to Alaska. But I began to see evidence of fiscal irresponsibility that I could no longer ignore. A prime example of this was my opponent, Representative Costello's yes vote for HB 110. A $20 billion giveaway to the oil and gas industry, which came without any corresponding oversight or accountability. In a time where a lot of Alaskans are hurting, we must make management of Alaska's fiscal and financial resources our top priority. I can't stand by and watch my opponent fail to manage Alaska's economic future. My husband served our nation in uniform, and now I feel called to serve my friends and neighbors down in Juneau. I'll bring real fiscal responsibility to Juneau.
We'll have to leave it right there, unfortunately. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go to our reporter's questions, starting with Daisha Eaton. Your first question for Ms. Costello.
Ms. Costello, what's the most important thing that you learned during your term in Juneau? And if you're reelected, what will you do differently if you go back?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the question, Daisha. I appreciate it. I have a lot of experience working in Juneau. Prior to being elected, I worked for Representative Norm Roekberg, who represented the district in the legislature. And when I was elected, I called Norm and I said, Norm, what advice do you have for me? And he said, listen to everyone and treat everyone equally. And I think that's the reason why House Bill 252 received so much overwhelming support. I met individually with every legislator, asked for their support, asked if they had any questions. This bill is unique in the United States. It makes Alaska the most competitive state in the country for certain types of fast-growing businesses. And I had over 20 co-sponsors. And I think that working across the aisle, working with everyone and listening is certainly a priority for me.
Okay, Michelle Scannell, 30 seconds.
Well, I will bring to Juno my ability to work positively and correctly across the aisle. But one of the things that my opponent mentioned was her House Bill 252. What I've done is I've looked into this, and the fact of the matter is there is only one company that has benefited from this bill. It's a company called Simply Social. And in all intents and purposes, it's a paper company that exists and only employs people over in Romania, and Alaska has not received any revenue, and Alaskan has not received any Alaskan jobs as well.
Okay, we better leave it there. Let's go to Grace Jang.
This question is from Ms. Scannell. You say that our freedoms are being chipped away and eroded. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was referring to my work as a nationally recognized privacy defender. It was shortly after 9/11 when I saw that the federal government was wanting to start monitoring the movements of American citizens within our own country. And I thought, that's not right. We have a right to be left alone and our rights to privacy. So I began to fight to prevent that. I also prevented the national ID card from coming into fruition. And I also fought to prevent a lot of the policies that TSA was wanting to implement to egregiously affect American citizens' ability to travel.
Mia Costello, 30 seconds.
Could you repeat the question, please? Ms. Scannell had said that our freedoms are being chipped away and eroded, and I wanted to know what she meant by that.
Well, I think that we all bring a history to the job, and I'm proud to say that what I bring to the job is a respect for privacy. I bring a sense of honesty and decency, and I will work with anyone to further our economy in Alaska, and I'm proud of the work that I've done. Thank you.
Okay, let's go back to Daisha Eaton.
This is a question for Ms. Scannell. In your statement, you say that you will not allow the PFD to be taken away in order to pay for billion-dollar tax giveaways to the oil industry. What do you mean exactly by that?
Well, when we're talking about HB 110, which is the $20 billion giveaway that my opponent voted for, that was going to leave us with massive shortfalls in our budget that was going to have to be made up by a lot of different avenues, and a lot of people have been saying that one of the ways we would have to do, one of the revenues we'd have to look at was our PFD and taking that away. And I don't think that's right. Many Alaskans, including people that I have spoken to in my own district, depend on the permanent fund check that they receive every fall to get through the year.
Mia Costello, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Despite what my opponent says, I'm for protecting the permanent fund dividend. And the permanent fund is strengthened by the resource development that we do in Alaska. The royalties go directly into the fund. And that is why I'm proud to have been working on permitting reform so that we can have more development and responsible development in Alaska. I believe that we need to think long-term in terms of our fiscal policy. And that is why I am voting for throughput in the pipeline, because it funds the majority of the services that Alaskans rely on a day-to-day basis.
Grace Jang, your next question.
This question is for Ms. Costello. You say that you're going to work harder for development, and to be honest, we've heard almost every candidate this election season say that. Exactly what do you mean by that, and how will you do that?
Okay, thank you for the question. When I was elected, I received a lot of emails from constituents and people who had concerns that they wanted to share with me. And one man in particular, his email resonated. He said he's grown old waiting for the state to provide him with permits for his business. And we hear this story over and over again. I think that what we've done in through my leadership and also with the support of the governor is we've brought the permitting and the Department of Natural Resources to the 21st century. We want people to be able to look online to find out who has their permit at the moment, which department has it been sent to. There's a bureaucracy and a permitting process that needs to be gone through for each project, and Alaskans deserve to know how long it's going to take and where that permit is at the moment. I think what we're doing really is bringing a business-friendly environment to bureaucracy, which we know hasn't always been the case. So I was proud to be a leader in that regard.
Michelle Scannell.
Well, I think that development in Alaska is definitely important, but we also have to make sure that when we talk about development in Alaska, that we make sure that we maintain the high standards for safety work conditions for our people, as well as making sure that we as a state continue to benefit and thrive. And I want to make sure that any kind of policies or legislation that we put into place make sure that we all benefit, businesses and individuals.
Daisha Eaton, your next question.
This is a question for Ms. Scannell. The Anchorage School District is burdened with meeting the educational needs of an increasingly diverse student population. What, if anything, can the state do to support the district?
Oh, well, the state can do many things. One of the things that I've constantly been championing was the fact that Florida actually discovered that we can 90% of all high school dropouts were illiterate at third grade. And I would like to have in place a system that we can check to make sure that we have literacy for children leaving third grade and going into fourth. That way we can help decrease the amount of people that are dropping out of our high schools, because we have some of the highest dropout rates in the nation. And I don't think that's right, and we're doing ourselves a disservice for Alaska's future.
Mia Costello, 30 seconds on what you heard.
Thank you. Actually, I'm missing volunteering in my son's classroom to attend this debate, so I really do care about what's going on in our classrooms as a former classroom teacher and someone who's worked with students who've dropped out. I think there's several things that the state can do. One, I think we can encourage vocational education opportunities. Not every student goes to college, and we need to engage students in the classroom so that they'll stay in school and enjoy the time that they're there learning. I also think that the state can make headway on keeping districts, holding them to the accountability that we've put in place, asking them to put more dollars in the classroom and less in the administration.
Thank you. Okay, and back to Grace Jang.
This question is from Mrs. Costello. You say you've been a victim of crime, so this is a two-part question. Can you explain that, and B, how has it shaped you as a lawmaker?
Yes, thank you for the question. While I was living in Juneau, I actually had my identity stolen, and my husband and I worked very closely with the police department and the FBI, and we were able to actually find the perpetrator. And so I feel that that experience is something, along with all my other experience that I bring to the legislature. I think that having lived in Alaska for 44 years, that I bring a whole array of experience that I try to put to use day to day as a legislator.
Michelle Scannell, 30 seconds.
Well, I think victims of crime is horrible. But unfortunately, Alaska, we rank one of the highest in the nation for sexual assault and domestic violence. And I want to make sure that when we talk about making sure victims have a safe place to go to, that we fully fund the shelters, which are the first line of defense for the women and children of our state, ready to leave our abusive situations. But in 2011, under my opponent's guise, grandmother's house in Fairbanks was closed. And
we're going to have to leave it right there. Now the candidates have an opportunity to question one another. Ms. Costello, you will ask the first question.
Okay.
She'll have 45 seconds to respond, and you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you hear.
Great, thank you. Ms. Scannell, I have focused a lot on economic development and job growth in Alaska, and my question for you is, your campaign has spent about 40% of your dollars for out-of-state business with signs and consultants that do not live in Alaska. So I was just hoping you could explain to the viewers and voters why you chose to give your business to outside vendors.
Well, you say 40%, but the amount of money that my campaign has raised is very little. So 40% sounds like a fantastically large number, but it's actually small. I only bought 250 signs. And those were from a union graphic design shop that was located in Texas. Unfortunately, Alaska does not have a union graphic shop that could do the signs that I was needing. So instead of going to a source that doesn't promote democracy in the workforce, I went and found one that does.
Yeah, Costello.
Thank you. As a legislator, I've worked diligently on expanding economic opportunities for Alaska, and if elected, I look forward to pursuing additional opportunities to grow our economy.
Michelle Scannell, your question.
The vast majority of our state's revenue comes from the oil industry. Oil companies have posted record profits in recent years, and 2012 saw a development boom in Alaska's Beaufort Sea. Why? When Alaska faces a looming fiscal cliff, would you give our money away to big oil?
Well, Alaska has two economic policies. Essentially, are encouraging exploration and then encouraging development. And so what we've done as a legislature, we've done a wonderful job encouraging that exploration. We've provided incentives for Cook Inlet, for almost all areas of the state. When it comes time for those companies to produce the oil, however, we have burdened them with some of the highest effective tax rates in the country. And what we are seeing is a lack of production on the North Slope. My goal is to look long-term for Alaska. I think throughput in the pipeline is how we remain a productive society, and I will vote for more throughput in our pipeline.
Ms. Scannell, 15 seconds.
The truth is, my opponent voted for HB 110, which amounted to $20 billion revenue giveaway for the oil companies to spend free and clear overseas. My opponent voted yes to the two most bloated budgets in our state's history. My opponent's fiscal irresponsibility threatens Alaska's economic future.
We have
future.
To go to your second question. And this is again from Ms. Costello.
Ms. Scannell.
It's for you.
Okay. All right. You presented yourself as a conservative right to life candidate in the Republican primary, but you changed your view to being pro-abortion, and now that I'm your opponent, you have gone back to being pro-life. How do you explain your flip-flop stance on an issue that is so important to many Alaskans?
Thanks for the question, Michelle. As somebody who is adopted and was raised by a loving family, I have been pro-life my entire 44 years of life. I have never flip-flopped on the issue, and I'm proud to be the pro-life candidate in District 20.
Ms. Scannell.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. When someone says whatever it takes just to get elected, that worries me. During this year's Republican primary, my opponent flatly stated that she would not have restricted her own mother's ability to choose an abortion. The only difference between now and then is her opponent.
Okay, let's leave it there. Ms. Costello, it is your turn to ask.
Thank you. Ms. Scannell, you describe yourself as a Tea Party Democrat, and I've never heard that term before. I thought this would be a good opportunity for you to explain to voters what you mean by that.
Absolutely. Thank you for your question. What I mean by that is I have a strong belief in the rights to privacy, and I've been working with people since 2011 who also believe this issue, Republicans, Independents, and Democrats. And these are the exact same groups of people that have formed the basis of the Tea Party movement that is shown and seen throughout the nation. So I have long-term links with people who have strong beliefs and worries about federal overreach.
Ms. Costello, 15 seconds.
Thank you. As a two-year legislator and someone who's hoping to get reelected, I've worked hard on economic responsibility, smaller, smarter government, making regulations in Alaska easy to understand. And if elected, I would continue those conservative values. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Scannell, your third question.
All right. A lot of people complain that our legislature spends too much money on pork barrel projects. A great example of this was your key support for the $2 million giveaway for UAA for free basketball tickets. When there are serious needs for basic educational services, why would you waste our money like that?
Thanks for the question. As a legislator, you get one vote on the budget, either yes or no. I did not put that project in the budget. However, I did vote for the budget. The projects that I put in the budget included drinking water quality studies for our district, eradicating Elodia in Sand Lake, safety improvements to our roads, and projects that were needed in our schools after I visited with the principals. And I'm proud of supporting those projects.
Ms. Scannell, 15 seconds.
All right. If we are not leading our nation in school completion and literacy rates, if we cannot afford to keep the teachers we already have employed, if we can't address the overcrowding of our schools, then we have no right to spend money on such irresponsible pork barrel projects.
Okay, Ms. Costello, we're back to you for your third and final question.
Thank you. Ms. Scannell, recently you were asked if you were voting for President Obama or Governor Romney. Have you decided who you're voting for, and can you share that with the viewers?
Absolutely. Well, I will be voting for president, but this is a race about state house and state legislative issues. And the issue that is facing voters right now is how we want our resources to be spent. Do we want them to be squandered, or do we want them to be spent responsibly with an understanding of the future and the direction of our state and how we need to responsibly invest in our people?
Ms. Costello.
Thank you. Last night when Governor Romney was talking about innovation and economic growth, I was encouraged because House Bill 252 is just that. It provides opportunities for entrepreneurs and business people right out of college to start their businesses here in Alaska. So I'll be voting for Governor Romney.
Back to our panel. Daisha Eaton, your first question.
This is for Ms. Scannell. Each week, soldiers are returning home to Alaska, and some are suffering from PTSD. Others return home disabled, and some even take their own lives. What, if anything, should the state be doing more to support returning veterans?
This is a wonderful question, and this actually hits very close to my home. I'm the wife of a disabled veteran, and when I help and assist my husband when we go to the VA, I actually sit down and I talk with veterans that are in the waiting rooms to see their doctors, and I speak with their wives. So I know that they are all suffering and trying to get back into civilian life. And I think that we as a state, since we have the highest per capita of veterans, have a right, a moral and an ethical right, to make sure that the veterans and their families have programs and resources behind them to help ease back into civilian life.
Mia Costello, 30 seconds.
Thank you. My father served in World War II, and I certainly am appreciative of everyone who sacrifices on behalf of our country. I think some of the things the legislature can do is make it easier for people who are trying to get services through the state. I think that homeless veterans is an issue that we certainly need to address, because housing is the number one concern before somebody can get their life on track. I think that we should support veterans and the families of veterans whenever possible, and I look forward to returning to Juneau in order to do that.
Let's return to Grace Jang.
This question is for Ms. Costello. You chaired the Finance Subcommittee reviewing the film tax credits bill, and you weren't a fan of that. Can you explain?
Well, thank you. That bill, or excuse me, that program had a lot of detractors and also people who were supportive of it. And as the chair of the committee that reviewed it, I wanted to hear all of the complaints and all of the things that people liked. It's a subsidy. I'm not a fan of subsidies. But what we did was we took that program, and after we worked on it in the subcommittee, we made it an Alaska jobs bill. So any dollar that a film industry will get is a dollar that will go directly to an Alaskan or an Alaska business.
Ms. Scannell, 30 seconds.
Fantastic. This is an industry, the film industry, that is vitally important to my specific district. When we've ever had a water scene shot for one of the movies that have come up here, it has always been Jewel Lake that they have chosen. So all the businesses in my district directly benefit from free people buying coffees and buying food and et cetera. So the film industry is important to me for that reason. But also, this was a bill that was held hostage and by my opponent, and it almost didn't make it out of committee because of her her lack of action.
Back to Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Costello. There's a lot of talk in Juneau about developing resources in the far corners of the state. If you're reelected, what could you do from Juneau to help develop urban resources here in Anchorage?
Well, that's an interesting question. What I first thought of is that we do have some opportunities for the development of rare earth minerals. When you look at the markets in the world and what is needed in those markets, I think Alaska can certainly play a role. I think that the resources exist where they exist, and oftentimes we need to work with companies that are trying to develop those resources. Of course, they need to be developed responsibly, but the rare earth minerals and the opportunities that we have as Alaskans is very exciting, and I look forward to Alaska filling that role in the world.
Ms. Scannell, 30 seconds.
I'm so sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Sure. There's a lot of talk in Juneau about developing natural resources in the far corners of the state. If you're elected, what could you do from Juneau to help develop our urban resources right here in Anchorage?
Once again, it's 30 seconds. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So mining is only 3% of our economy. I am a strong proponent of mining. I want to see it much more of our economy. I want to make sure that when we talk about mining, that we keep the high standard of job safety that we have and not do anything that increases worker harm and prevents a lot of people from being able to kiss their husband and wives goodnight.
Grace Jang, your next question.
My next question is for Ms. Scannell, and actually I just want to clarify something because I'm not sure I understood your previous answer. Who are you voting for president?
Oh, I am voting for the current president.
Okay, thank you. So my question for you is, you have an ad on your website criticizing Ms. Costello, and it involves chickens, video of chickens.
Yes.
Can you explain that? And now that Ms. Costello is debating you, are you going to take that ad down?
No. That That ad is calling her on the fact that she refused for three separate debates, one on which was on Dave Stearin's radio show, who is a very strong proponent of my opponent. And she still refused three separate debates that she declined to do one. So I felt compelled to bring that to the attention of the Alaskan voter, that if she's not willing to debate me so the voters have a better idea of who is going to represent their voice down in Juneau, then maybe she shouldn't be voted for in the first place.
Ms. Costello, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I am willing to debate. I am willing to talk about the issues. And I've attended debates where my opponent was not there. And I continued on door knocking and campaigning with my message. And that's how I'm going to run my campaign, in a positive manner and spreading my message to as many voters as possible.
And now Desha Eaton will have a question for both of you, and both of you have 30 seconds to respond. You will go first, Ms. Costello. Desha Eaton.
Ms. Costello, health care is very expensive here in Alaska. Some people actually go out of state to see doctors and have treatments. What can the state do to provide more affordable health care for Alaskans in Alaska?
Certainly it is a problem. It's $1.3 billion in the state budget, and we see that that number will be increasing. One of the things I think we can do is provide transparency. Oftentimes as a consumer, we don't know what will be charged when we go to the doctor. I know my family doesn't, and oftentimes there's a discussion whether or not to go at all because we don't know what will be charged. So I think that that's a first step. I also think that insurance companies should be encouraged to not require the full reimbursement that they are allowed under law, but do something that's more achievable for families.
Ms. Scannell, 30 seconds.
All right. Well, I think that in the future of our state health care, we need to first find out who is going to be winning the presidential election, because that will have a lot of determination as to what our health care system looks like going in to 2014, 2013. And depending on that, if we do have a health care act, it is important that my voters vote for me, because I am the only person in our state house race who has a proven track record to prevent federal overreach and knows how to write policy positively and correctly.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go to our closing statements with Ms. Costello going first for 1 minute.
Thank you. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of the positions that I think are important. As I've been going door to door and listening to voters, one of the things that I know is important to you is that I do listen. For the last 2 years, I've worked diligently in Juneau. I've worked to increase economic opportunity for young people who graduate. I've worked as a leader to make state government more transparent and easier for the average Alaskan to work with the government. I've increased vocational opportunities for our schools, and I've also responded to many constituent issues. I've funded projects in the district that needed addressing, such as water quality and safety of our roads. My husband and I are both lifelong Alaskans, and we're raising two boys here in Anchorage who are attending the public school system like my husband and I did. And I am truly honored to be representing you and would love to have your support on November 6th. My cell phone is 227-5276, and my website is votemia.com. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Scannell, your 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you. You have a real choice. There is a big difference between my opponent and me. You can either vote to cater to the oil industry and jeopardize our PFD, or vote for fiscal responsibility and discipline. I will fight for our fair share and ensure everybody benefits from our resources. My opponent says one thing and does another, but her actions speak louder than her words. Her vote to give away $20 billion of our state's revenue in return for nothing, not even a promise of development, is irresponsible. Alaska would have been left with decaying roads, schools, and public safety. If you want someone to bring real fiscal responsibility to Juneau, if you want a state rep who will work hard to make sure Alaska is a place where our families can grow and thrive, then vote for me. I'm the wife of a disabled veteran, the mother of two boys, and I'm Michelle Scannell, and the only special interest I serve is you.
Thank you, Ms. Costello and Ms. Scannell. Next on Running, we'll hear from the candidates, the Senate candidates from District K. Stay with us.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.com.
www.kskaanchorage.org.